Okay, Boker Tov world. Today's daf in Masechet Yevamot, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, is daf Samach Vov. We're up to the beginning of the Halakha Perek that Richie was so kind to begin yesterday. And so we continue. Almana Kohen Gadol, Grusha V'Chalutza Kohen Hedyot. Now we'd like to discuss the level of the relationship between the Isurei Kuhuna that went ahead and got married. And this is going to define the relationship, particularly in terms of Truma. Because remember that so long as a Kohen is married, he is able to feed Truma to his wife. And here, the marriage is an inappropriate marriage, but nonetheless, the Kiddushin are Chalim, because it's not an Isser Karet, obviously. And because of that, there is a legal marriage. Remember that the Torah says, Kinyan Kaspo, anything which is the Kinyan Kaspo of a Kohen is able to be Ochel Betruma. So therefore, that would mean that wherever there was something that had a din of Kinyan, such as a wife or an Eved, both would be allowed to eat truma. But how about if there's a number of issues that we should think about? How about if the wife has an eved? And can the wife herself eat truma in this case? Obviously, the first time the Kohen sleeps with this wife, he makes her a chalala, because any woman who's gone through a relationship, how do you like that? It already fixed it. Here we go. Trevor and Alona put right next to each other. From here, you see that even a Yirhur Tshuva, just the Yirhur, they didn't even make the Seder yet. And already, Min HaShemayim, it registers. This Zoom is obviously connected right there directly. It's an amazing thing. Really amazing. Never fails. So over there, the moment that he sleeps with her, she becomes a Chalala. Because any woman that has had a relationship that is an iser to a Kohen becomes a Chalala. So she cannot eat Truma in this case. Now, suppose she has Avadim. Now, normally a woman is able, if she's married to a Kohen, even though she's not a Kohenet, she's married to a Kohen, she is able to give her Avadim Truma to eat the same way that she can eat Truma. But how about if she cannot eat Truma? We're going to find out that the mechanisms for Hachalat Truma are a lot more complex than we ever realized. So here the Mishnah tells us that in the event that an Almana is married to a Kohen Gadol, or a Grush of a Chalutza, even to a Kohen Hedyot, because the only one that is usher to the Almana is only the Kohen Gadol. But over here, we have any case, either the Yisr Lav of Almana, or the Yisr Lav of Grush of a Chalutza, and she brings Avadim into the marriage. Now remember that there are two different types of kinyonim that are nogea, the relationship between man and woman. What is the right of a husband on the property of his wife, and what is the right of the woman on any property that was originally hers? So we remember we've had many times, we've gone over the idea of the difference between Nichse Melug and Nichse Tzon Barzal. Nichse Tzon Barzal, it's a strange way of saying it, but it's a very sweet way. Nichse Tzon Barzal, as opposed to Nichse Melug, are Nichasim that they may look like sheep to you, but they're made out of solid titanium, meaning that this is an investment that even though it's all types of risks, including death, market changes, so on and so forth, makes absolutely no difference to her, because what we've done is we've turned them into titanium. How did we do that? So what we do is, and this, if you'll remember, every ketuvah, wherever you've heard somebody who's reading from the ketuvah, so it always says in the ketuvah, V'dan edunya dan halatre mibei nashor mibei avia, and so on, and v'hu hosif kenegdan, and what is all of that? That is the acceptance of the husband of his responsibility to get that value back. So let's say she brings into the marriage a flock of literal sheep. Well, I mean, they're married for 30 years. Okay, what happens to those sheep? Meanwhile, those sheep, a lot of things might happen. They're all dead 30 years later, but there's an awful lot of flock that has grown from those sheep, right? Are those hers? Are those his? And what about if nothing is left? What about if the whole thing was wiped out by a virus? No sheep left. What about if the market has changed so that now sheep are worth quadruple what they originally were? What about if the market has changed and now they're worth a tenth? So the idea of Nichsei Tzon Barzel is to create a legal circumstance where these sheep have been turned into a value rather than an item. So that's why we call them Tzon Barzel. The value will not change. And that is done through an actual getting a shamaut, which is getting an assessment of the value of these sheep. And now the husband accepts that value upon himself, come hell or high water. And he is responsible no matter what. But because of that, he only has to give her back that value. So no matter what happens, whether it loses value, gains value, multiplies, and so on, she will always get back the $100,000 that it was estimated to be worth at the time of the marriage. And that is called Tzon Barzel. Now, there's also sheep that you can pluck off the wool. That's called Nichsei Melug. That's called plucking. And what that means is that the sheep are still hers, so to speak. So the shopping plaza belongs to her if it looks like a shopping plaza instead of sheep. But it's the same idea. The property belongs to her, but the income of the property or usages, again, depending, if it's sheep, it could actually be plucking of wool. If it's birds, it could be plucking of feathers for pillows. If it's a bank account, it could be plucking of the interest payments, and so on and so forth. But again, so these are just concepts or abstractions. But the Nichsei Melug would mean that they are not estimated. They are entirely hers. They belong to her. He has no rights whatsoever to the actual value. He only has rights to the income or to whatever benefit accrues from them, only so long, of course, as the marriage is working out. The moment that he divorces her, the moment that he dies, he's responsible to get all of whatever is left of her Nichsei Melug. He doesn't owe her anything if anything happened to it. It was hers. It wasn't his the whole time. He was just enjoying the peirot. And when it comes to the value of the Nichsei Tzon Barzel, the moment that he dies, the estate is responsible for all of that money. It's entirely hers, and she collects it from any heirs and so on, because she has a pre-existing lien. It's a very early lien against the estate from when they got married. She was there before her kids were, at least hopefully, and therefore, she's the one who's going to be able to collect that. So that would be the big difference, and that has entirely different implications. You would think that it would be dependent, the entirely different implications, would be dependent on that big machlokas we've had up until now, of whether kinyan peirot is the same as kinyan haguf or not, right? Because nichsei melug is essentially kinyan peirot. Kinyan peirot means you have a right to eat the fruit off of the tree, which is essentially the same thing as the plucking. So the fruit is the plucking off the tree. However, as Tosis points out, the issue of kinyan peirot is irrelevant to our sugya, surprisingly, because kinyan peirot ki kinyan haguf would not impact the issue of achilas truma, because when it comes to truma, we find specifically that it has to be called kinyan kaspo as the literal value ownership, rather than a virtual value ownership through having some rights to income from it. So therefore, let's cross that out of our lexicon here. It's not part of that overall machlokas. And let's see what actually would define the issues for us. Okay, so now going to the Mishnah. Now, once again, we know the terminologies. Please make sure that you write them down and that we remember very clearly what is Nichsei Tzon Barzel and what is Nichsei Melug. So, an almana for a kohen gadol, grusha v'chalutza l'kohen hedyot, marriages that are actual legal marriages in terms of all of their financial issues, but have a problem. They've created a state of chalalut, at the moment that they're consummated, then that the woman would no longer be able, even if she was a bat kohen, who has been eating truma her whole life because her father is a kohen, the moment that this kohen gadol takes her, oh my God, now she's at the pinnacle. Yeah, except for one minor problem. She can no longer even eat the original truma that she ate, because now she's been completely messed up as a chalala, which is the antithesis of the kuna, of course. So now in any of these cases, if the woman had brought along avdei malug and avdei tzon barzel into the marriage, again, remember how beautifully we're so used to these abstractions that the the literal translation of the words, if you have a slave who is a metal sheep, if Google would translate this, have a little bit of a problem. So anyway, you bring in avanim that are nechse meluga or nechse tzon barzel. Here's the din. The scoop is that the avdei melug cannot eat truma, but the avdei tzon barzel can eat truma. And let me define this for you, says the Mishnah. Just remember that what defines them as avdei melug is the fact that if anything happens to them, imetu metu la, if they die, that's her problem. Imhotiro, if they now reproduce or they're worth more on the market, whatever, that's all her accrual in value. Hotiru la. So then the halacha is that even though in a case where the Baal is using these avadim, remember, because he has the right to the pluckings, and the plucking in this case would be the work that the slave is going to be doing in the house. And because of that, he has to feed those slaves. So, afopishu chayav b'mizonotam. So you would say, okay, so here is a kohen who has to feed these avadim, and therefore they should be considered to be his avadim and should be allowed to eat truma. The halacha is lo yochlu b'truma. He's going to have to go out. He's going to have to buy food for them that is not truma. And we're going to see why this is true in the Gemara. On the other hand, how do we define avdei tzon barzel? What makes them tzon barzel? That if anything would happen to them and they die, it's his problem. He's going to have to replace their full estimated original assessed value, I should say. Their assessed value he's going to have to pay for. And if there's increase in value or natural increase, they are going to be nonetheless vis-a-vis his wife, the same value they always were, and he gets to keep the increase or the loss. So there, since he has full responsibility for these avadim, hare elu yochlu betruma, then they are fully and totally his in terms of a kinyan haguf. Now, let's take a case of a bat Yisrael, perfectly kosher marriage, a bat Yisrael. She never ate truma before. She marries a kohen. Now, in this case, if she brings in avadim of any kind, bein avdei melug, bein avdei tzon barzel, hare elu yochlu betruma. Now, here, surprisingly, is a psak that does not seem to be consistent with what we said before. Before we said that if the avadim are nichse melug, then they do not get to eat in truma. And here we're saying, if the avadim are nichse melug, they do get to eat in truma. Now, your immediate reaction to that would be as follows. The reason that the nichse melug are eating if the owner is a bat Yisrael is because she is eating. Because since there was nothing wrong with the marriage, so the moment that she married a kohen, she now eats truma on her own. So maybe because she is eating truma, part of her rights to eating truma is the right to feed truma to her own avadim. And that would be a perfectly natural response. And so far in the Mishnah, it would be a correct response. Yes, in the first case where the wife cannot eat, the wife cannot feed her slaves. But in the second case, where the wife can eat, there the wife can also give truma to her own slaves. That's what you would conclude, and you would be wrong. But we only find out that you're wrong when the Mishnah continues. And here's the continuation. bat kohen, in the opposite direction, when you have a bat kohen who is niseit liYisrael, so she goes ahead and marries Yisrael. Now, in this case, she only had rights up until now to be able to eat because of her father. But the moment that she marries a Yisrael and she brings in Avadim, then she cannot eat Truma herself, and her Avadim, even if they're Tzon Barzo, are not owned by the Kohen. So then, Hare Elu lo yochlu b'truma. Of course, in such a case, none of the Avadim can eat, because even if they're the Kinyonim of her, but she, the moment that she marries, her husband prevents her from even feeding the truma that she had a right to prior to this for truma. Now, so far, everything seems perfectly all right. The moment that we discover that we're on the wrong track is now in the Gemara. Asks the Gemara, V'avdei melug lo yochlu b'truma? You're telling me that these avadim that are nechse melug, it said over here that if she was married to a Kohen Gadol, they don't eat in truma. So again, that seems to be because since she herself is not allowed to eat truma, so too her avadim are not allowed to eat truma. But I'll tell you that that's a mistake. Because take a look at this braita. Amai. Lahavi ki kinyan no shekana kinyan. The question is like this. Let's take out the issue of the correctness of the marriage. You're saying this is an inappropriate marriage. Okay, fine. If a Kohen bought an Eved, now that Eved gets to eat Truma. How about if the Eved of the Kohen buys an Eved? You'll say, but how is that possible? The Eved of a Kohen is basically the Kohen, because an Eved doesn't own anything of his own. So if he would go and buy an Eved, it would be directly the Kohen's Eved, right? Wrong. In normal cases, you would be right. But there are possible cases where an Eved can own actually another Eved. And how would that be? Well, one possibility might be that someone came along and gave an Eved money that was on a condition that the owner would never be able to use that money for anything. So that creates a catch-22 situation. The moment he gets the money and the Baal takes it, then he doesn't have the money. So in that oscillation, the halacha is that the Eved uses the money, but the Adin doesn't get it. Okay? So that's one possibility. Another possibility would be where the Kohen was mafkir the Eved. Now, even though he was mafkir the Eved and he didn't give him a get shichrur, the Eved continues to eat truma because he is still considered to be, until he gets a get shichrur, he's considered to be an Eved Kohen. But since the Kohen was mafkir the Eved vis-a-vis the financial element, remember, there are two separate kinyonim. One that defines the legal rights in terms of Isser, and one that defines the legal rights in terms of finances. When a person is mafkir an Eved, he has no legal rights to any financial issues, which means he cannot use this Eved. That is financial. If he tries to use the Eved goes to court and says, this guy is forcing me to do work for him. He should be arrested. And that is exactly what the halacha is. But on the other hand, he is still legally, in terms of the Isser, he is the Eved of a Kohen. So in that case, this is how Tosfos understands the situation. He could go ahead and buy an Eved, and then what would be the din? So the way we were understanding it until now is that everything basically gets to the person who's eating through the right to eat. However, as we're about to see, the Tanya, minayin lekohen, shenasa isha, how do we know? A Kohen who marries a woman, or a Kohen who is kone avadim, and then they eat betruma, that is because of the pasuk. Kohen ki ikne nefesh kinyan kaspo, hu yochal bo. So fine, as long as there's a kinyan, they can eat. But how do we know that if that wife buys herself an Eved with her own money, or that Eved goes ahead and buys himself an Eved, again, from his own money, How do we know that the Eved of the Eved gets to eat Truma too? That's because Shenemar v'Kohen ki yikne nefesh kinyan kaspo hu yochal bo. So we're understanding this is an extra step, because all of this is what is that doing over here? So we're reading that kinyan. All it needed to say is Kohen ki yikne nefesh. The kinyan kaspo hu yochal bo therefore means that we should read it like this: Kohen ki yikne. That kinyan kaspo, the idea over there was that the kinyan kaspo was the one that was the, this is a Germanic sentence, the subject was at the end. So ki yikne nefesh kinyan kaspo, when the kinyan kaspo of the kohen is kona a nefesh, then hu yochal bo. But if that's true, then we would have no right to say that you can only feed your Eved if you yourself have a right to eat, because that's simply no longer true, right? Before we thought that the reason that the Chalala cannot feed her Eved, who's a Dikse, but look, Truma is because he's only eating because of her right to eat, correct? And since she doesn't have a right to eat, so she cannot feed the Eved of Nechzei Maluk. But now it seems that the Tepasuk has said that there's a direct right to eat by being the grand kinyan of a Kohen. Okay, so then forget about what came in between. The Kohen has a right to feed both his kinyan and his grand kinyan. He's allowed to feed them Truma. So in this case, the Nechzei Maluk, they should be able to eat over here because she was a Kenyan and her Avadim are the Grand Kenyan. So what do we have to worry about whether it's Nechzei Maluk or Nechzei Tzom Barzel? Ultimately, it's a Grand Kenyan of a Kohen, and therefore, there should be no problem. Therefore, asks the Gemara, so how are you telling me that Avdei Maluk should not be allowed to eat? Here it says Beferish in the Torah that Kenyano, Shekana kinyan ochel, a grand kinyan can eat. Well, maybe, nonetheless, there is a limitation from outside of this. It's not because there's no essential right. It's because only a kinyan that has the right to eat. So there's, maybe there's a general principle that kol ha'ochel ma'achil, whoever is allowed to eat truma, can be the cause of someone else eating truma. But kol she'eino ochel, eino ma'achil. Someone who themselves has no right to eat cannot feed through her kinyan. So that means that even though if she would be herself mutera to eat truma, in this case, since she herself can't eat truma, her avonim can't eat truma. Says the Gemara, man, I mean, that is like the ultimate. You're sitting there on the stage and you've created a new god, you know, that comes down from the ceiling. There is a rule. And the rule is that only if you can eat truma, can you feed truma. Well, where the heck did that come from? Not to mention the fact that it's totally and absolutely nonsense. Okay, let me give you a question. You've got a Kohen who is an Arel. Can he eat truma? No. An Arel's lo yochal bo. How about if he's tameh? Can he eat truma? No. Do his avadim eat truma in that case? Does his wife eat truma in that case? Absolutely. What happened to your famous rule? Only one who can eat can feed. And over here, he cannot eat. And enan ochlinu ma'achilin, they can't eat. Nonetheless, they can feed. Yeah, come on. I mean, but speaking abstractly, it's not that they can't eat. It's that they've got a sore mouth. Basically, that's what it's about. You're saying there's an extrinsic problem. An extrinsic problem is a sore mouth. It's as ridiculous to argue from a sore mouth as to argue from an oral. An oral can't eat. Fine, so fix him. He's tummy. Fine, so he's tummy, so fix him. But he can't eat truma because his mouth is sore. I mean, what a silly thing is that? Okay, so that's obviously not a problem at all. Okay, I'll bring you a problem which goes beyond a sore mouth. How about a mamzer? He can't eat. He sure ain't a kohen. Okay. What's the case of a mamzer? A brilliant case. A simple case. But we need to once again remember what happens in the case of a Bas Yisrael who has no right to eat truma, who goes ahead and marries a kohen. As long as the kohen is alive, she can eat truma. But the moment that the kohen dies, she cannot eat truma. But if, remember, we've spoken about this many times, about how lovely it is that it's a sugi in Yevamos, because it so parallels the issue. If she has a child from that kohen, she continues to eat truma. And suppose that child died? Well, if that child has a child, very much like Yibum, right? Zera Einla. Something is true over here. If a child has a child, and now she has a grandson, who is still a grandson from her husband, she continues to eat truma, even though that grandson is a mamzer. So here's what happened. Cohen marries nice, sweet, religious girl. They have a daughter, and that daughter goes ahead and marries a mamzer. Oy, yoy, yoy. And now she has a son who's a mamzer. Well, the daughter died. Okay, now the wife, the nice fruma wife with a big shetel of that kohen, she wants to continue eating truma. So they say to her, well, you have any children? No. You have any grandchildren? Ah, I got a mamzer. Oh, that's great. Eat truma. Why are you eating truma? Because your husband is still alive, so to speak, to give you truma, because it is mamzer. Now, if someone who himself can't eat cannot be the cause of someone else eating, I mean, it's exactly the case over here. You created a rule, and you said that, yes, it's true that a grand kinyan of a kohen can eat, but not if the middle part can't eat. Well, here you go. This is exactly the same situation. You're eating directly because of the kohen, but the middle part, so to speak, the mommy, can't eat, like over here, and nonetheless is machil. So that is the end of your grand conceived ad hoc rule. There ain't no ad hoc rule. Ah, Parnea is finally getting to the point where we have fresh coffee. Excellent. Barnea, you put sugar in. What the heck? Now, what is that?
No sugar. It's with the steam of the machine. The foam. No sugar at all, Rebbe.
No sugar. No artificial sweetener either.
No, but we are overlooking the Mediterranean Sea.
Wouldn't you know it? The Mediterranean is in Barnea's neighborhood.
I'm down the block from Rebbe. I'm just trying not to make waves.
I saw that you're down the block. You're in Galitzans. No?
Near Etzion.
Oh, no, I thought I saw the Galitzans coffee machine. Oh, okay, so I made a mistake. Okay. All right, so there goes your big thing. Omer Ravina, says Ravina, once we're into ad hoc rules, let me adjust the ad hoc rule so that at least it makes sense, okay? So here's the new adjustment. I shouldn't have said anyone who can eat can feed. I should have said any Kenyan who can eat can feed. Now go show me my rule ain't good. The momser's not a Kenyan, so that doesn't count. That's what we meant to say over there. So a Kenyan who is ochel is ma'achil. But a Kenyan is not ochel, is not machil. So that's the almana has a din of a kinyan. But since she can eat truma, she cannot be machil truma. Rava says, come on with these rules. You can't go around making up these rules. The reason that she can't eat is obviously a gezeira. Of course she can eat midiraisa. The pusik covers not she, I mean her avodim, can eat midiraisa. The pasuk covers exactly the case in the Mishnah. And Almana goes, marries a Kohen Gadol, she's not allowed to eat, but nonetheless her avdei melug are allowed to eat, as far as the Torah is concerned. You know why we don't allow her to give truma to the avdei melug? I'll tell you why. It's Rabbananu de Gazribu. Kidesha Tomar. They want to make her feel like a total prostitute. That's why. So they want her to say, wait a minute here. I'm not allowed to eat truma. I understand that. I mean, so we were bad and we're having this illicit relationship. But my avodim can't eat truma? I mean, so what does that mean? I'm a whore? Like, I'm not the Kenyan that was Cana? So she says, so, talking about herself, she's nothing but a whore to this guy. I want out. That's going to cause a lot of fighting, because she's going to start feeling like she is really not esteemed in his eyes. And it's that one beginning that's going to end the marriage. Beautiful insight. Just create a little resentment. And it grows and it grows and it grows. And that way, the Chachomim are very happy having ruined this marriage. And therefore, they'll get divorced. And now there won't be a situation of an almana who is living with a Kohen Gadol. Serves you right, say they. So therefore, Hilkach Atila Puka. In the end, he's going to get rid of her. Rav Ashi says, you're right, Rava, about the Gezerah. But I think that's a little bit much of a psychological gezeira. It's a real gezeira. And I'll tell you what the problem is. Gezeira shema ta'achil la'achar mita. What we're worried about is her psychology in terms of being over on an iser. Remember that her nichsei melug are only eating now because they are the kinyan of a kinyan, right? When her husband dies, they're no longer a kinyan of a kinyan. Now, here's what she's thinking. What we're talking about is specifically a case where we are married to, as we're going to see, we're going to start easy in Rav Ashi. In the end, we're going to talk about a much clearer zeroing in of the Gezerah. But what we're worried about is that she thinks that up until now, I've been able to feed them truma. Even if my husband dies, I can still give them truma. What? Says the Gemara, how would she think such a stupid thing? If you're going to say that there's a gezerah like that, then even in a normal case, we have a regular marriage of a Bas Yisrael, and she marries a Kohen, you're telling me she shouldn't be allowed to eat truma? Because maybe she'll eat truma afterwards, right? And maybe she'll continue to feed truma afterwards. As Tosis points out, even though it says ta'achil, it would still be a direct gezerah. Maybe she'll think the same thing about herself. I could continue eating. Sorry, says Rav Ashi. I meant to add a little point. The gezerah over here is talking about a case where the almana was herself from a family of kohanim. So she was a kohanim. So here's her problem. She grew up eating truma. She goes ahead and she marries this guy. And the avodim that she used to have when she was not married, she continues to eat, to feed truma. Now, she thinks that she's got a problem because she's sleeping with this guy. She knows she's being a bad girl. She's not supposed to be married to the Kohen Gadol. So she understands that she loses her rights to eat truma. But she says, look, I still feed my avodim truma. That's because the avodim weren't bad. Only I was bad. Now her husband dies, so she says, okay, I always fed my avodim truma. Before I got married to the Kohen Gadol, I fed them truma because my dad was eating truma. So even though I may have a problem, but that problem does not devolve upon my avodim can now continue to eat truma even though my husband is dead. Because it's same as it always was before. I'll continue feeding them truma because now I am a Bas Kohen. And therefore, we'll feed them because of daddy. So that's where there was a problem. We're talking about an almana who was a kohenet, and she can come to rationalize an atila ruye, and she's going to paskin that, well, meikora akle betruma de venasha. All of these avonim were eating the truma from my father's home. Then I went ahead and I got married to this kohen gadol. They continued to eat, even though I wasn't allowed to eat. Now that I'm no longer married to the kohen gadol, I can go back to feeding my avodim from my father's truma. But she doesn't realize that the psul on her to eat, because of the fact that she's a chalala, she no longer has any rights to truma at all. Now she has no rights to truma because her husband is dead, and they are not a grand kinyan of a kohen. And she has no rights to truma from her father, because she's a chalala and can't go back to Beis Aviyah. V'lo yadata mikara lo shavita lo nafsha chalala. She doesn't understand that originally, before she married this kohen gadol, she was allowed to eat her father's truma and her avanim were. But now that she created a permanent status, hashta shavita lo nafsha chalala, now her avanim are not allowed to. Okay, says the Gemara, that's a nice gezeira, I mean, but it would only be true if, in fact, she is an almana kohenet, if she was originally a kohenet. But what about our Mishnah? I mean, an almana is a regular bat Yisrael. I mean, what could go wrong over there? I mean, why would she think, she knows she never used to eat truma before, so how could she come to think that things will go back to the way they were before? There was no before that enabled her with truma. So what kind of idiotic gezeira would that be? Well, says Rav Ashi, bi'almanuta lo pligi rabbana. That's because the rabbanon didn't make any distinction between an almana l'kohen gadol. Now, look, you're going to ask yourself, the rabbanon only make a gezeira where it's a common occurrence, right? So this is called a common occurrence. I mean, so what's Rav Ashi saying over here? I think that the pshat is like this. He is saying, you cannot make a gezeira with the sole purpose of making a woman feel like a whore. That is not a valid gezeira. You need a mechanism for the gezeira. I'm giving you the mechanism. The mechanism is it may result in feeding truma to someone who's not allowed to eat truma. That's the mechanism. So you'll say, but I mean, that's only for an alman who's about kohen. True. But remember that we often make lo plug gezeras. So we made a lo plug gezera. Now you're going to say to me, but I mean, come on, that's stupid. The rabbanon don't stick their nose into situations that come up only once in a yovel. That's true. But in this case, the real situation that they're sticking their nose into is any time that this kohen is going to be married to someone that's usher to make her feel like a whore. Yes. And that's still true. And it provides a very good reason to stick your nose into it. But as far as the mechanism is concerned, I now offer you a valid mechanism. That's how I understand the sugya. Okay, Itmar. So now, it says like this. We have a machlokas amoroyim. A machneset shum levala. Woman brings evaluation. This is another way of stating nichsei tzon barzel. So a woman brings an evaluated piece of property into a marriage, and then the marriage collapses. She wants back her actual item. Now, what this was a Louis XVI china set that has been in the family for centuries. And she says, look, this was evaluated at $1,750,000. I want it back. Husband says, I love this Louis XVI piece. I'll pay you the $1,750,000, but I'm not giving it back. She says, that's not fair. It's really mine just because of the fact that we evaluated it and you accepted responsibility for the evaluation does not entitle you to keep it. So she sues. What's the din? He omer, kelai ani notelet. I want my china set. V'hu omer, damim ani notein. I pay. Full evaluation. Hadin imi. Who gets the right? Rabbi Yehuda omer, hadin ima. She has the right. Rabbi Ami omer, hadin imo. He gets the right to pay. Rabbi Yehuda says, I'll tell you why I believe the din is ima. Because mishum shevach beit avia didahave. Look, there were always two different issues. There was the actuality of the ownership of the thing, which is meaningful to her because this was something that relates back to her family. Suppose the item was shares in her father's business. Do you understand that that means that she has an emotional investment besides the simple monetary value, and that therefore gives her rights of collection, and he only committed himself to value. So it makes sense to allow her to get the item. Rabbi Ami says, Stadin imo. Because kivan di omar mar, imetu metu lo, imotiru hotiru lo. Look, I mean, let's analyze in a very cold way ownership, okay? Basically, when you tell me that if these avanim would have died, it's his problem, not hers. And that would have meant that if the China set would have all of a sudden been smashed by a meteorite, then the din would be that it was his loss, not her loss. And if the value increases, he would have been the one to get the increase in value. So if that's the case, because of that, for all intents and purposes, you're saying that these avodim can, however, chayev b'achrayutan yochelu, that means that they're his kinyan. So then it's his. He has just as much right. And don't come into court with emotions. He is an owner, exactly the way she is. If he says, I feel connected to this and I want it, how can you force someone to give you something that he has just as much right to as you do? Omer of Safra, wait a minute. That has nothing to do with the price of eggs in China, excuse me. The Mishnah never said they are his. Mikatani v'hein shalo. It says he's chayev b'achrayut. Maybe it just means he's responsible for it, but they're not his. They don't give him any rights at all. Now, gentlemen, I need to introduce something that I am going to tell you about this Gemara, which people don't know. And there's an extremely profound issue going on, and that is, when the Torah introduces the din of a shoel. So a shoel is somebody who borrows property. So the halacha over there is exactly like tzon barzel. Anything that happens, it accrues to the person who borrowed the property. He borrowed your car, the engine exploded through no fault of his. This is why you should never borrow a car. It's entirely your responsibility. Okay, there may be one particular thing if it exploded because of how it was working, machmas malacha, that may be a special case. But if a meteorite hits the car, and there goes your car, you're going to have to pay for it, not the owner. It's going to be your loss. Okay, so that makes the car nichse tzon barzel, so to speak. Guess where the Torah introduces that halacha in Mishpatim. Introduces that halacha together with the din that someone who rapes a woman has to marry her. What the world? But the point over there in the pasuk is that wherever you stand in the place of a Baal, and a Baal can mean, again, Baal, we always pointed out, is a sexual word. When you own something, that's an extension of relationship. And therefore, it's called ba'alut. So we even call that husbandry in English. You can be dealing with land. It's still husbandry. You can be dealing with animals. It's still husbandry. So the idea of being a ba'al means that if you are acting in locum ba'al, you are a ba'al. You rape this woman? Oh, you're her husband? Fine. You will never be allowed to divorce her. After all, you're her total husband, aren't you? Do what you want with her. Very good. And she's your total wife. Now try to divorce her. Lo yuchal agarshako yomav. Perfect, right? But of course, that relationship does not have to do with the fact that you're responsible. It has to do with the fact that you've taken the place of the owner. Now that means that the word achrayut has two completely different applications. One is where you are responsible, and you're going to pay if you act irresponsibly. That's the case of the other shomrim. You may be responsible if it's stolen. You may be responsible if it's lost. You may, and so on and so forth, the different denim, right? That is a responsibility which you pay for because of the common understanding of the word responsible. You needed to be able to respond, and you didn't, and therefore you pay. But responsible in the case of a shoel is even if you're not able to respond. We still use the word as a borrowed term, responsible. You weren't able to stop that meteorite, I guarantee you. But you're totally responsible to pay for the car anyway. Now, that's a completely different sense of responsible. That's what's really going on in the Gemara here. So that the first question that the Gemara is asking is confusing the nature of achrayut with the standard meaning of responsibility. And therefore, the Gemara asks what's going to turn out to be a stupid question. Because the only assertion that we made about responsibility is that since he is responsible on this second level, he's an owner. And the Gemara is going to ask a question from a case where you're not responsible on level two responsibility, made a responsibility. You're responsible only in the normal sense of responsible. And therefore, the Gemara asks, are you trying to tell me that whenever you're responsible for something, that then you're allowed to feed truma to that thing? I mean, it's a beferish, a Mishnah in Masechet Trumot, which should at least get some kind of picture out of Moshe Forman. It's in Masechet Trumot. And that is that a Yisrael who rents a cow from a Kohen, he is allowed to feed that cow truma. Animal feed only, of course, because you can't feed human feed to a cow, if it's truma, but he can feed the cow truma. On the other hand, if a Kohen rents a cow from a non-Kohen, even though he is responsible to feed it, he cannot feed it truma. And he's going to have to go and buy non-truma. So even though the Kohen is responsible for everything that a socher is responsible, he cannot feed it truma. So why is Rav Safra claiming that it's responsibility that allows a Kohen to feed truma? Here we see clearly responsibility is not an indication of ownership. Ah, come on, says the Gemara, get off it. The Tisbra, I mean, this is a real question. He's responsible in the sense that if it's lost, if it's stolen, that's what he's supposed to prevent. And if he doesn't, he's going to pay. But he's not responsible in the sense of taking the place of the owner. But on Seah, if a meteorite hits it, Bekachasha, if now it suddenly loses weight because it gets cancer, or how about if it was Nifchatameh, how about if the market value went down? The market value. The guy says, I lent you my car. Now, what happened to the market? What in the world? So this cannot be your responsibility. No. So then that's not real responsibility. Mashen ken tzon barzel. Now, that is total responsibility in the sense not that you're able to do something about it, but rather that it, for all intents and purposes, is yours. And therefore, in that case, you would be able to feed truma, and I'll prove it to you. Okay? The case over here is similar to the closing of the Mishnah in Masechet Trumot, where over there it says that if a Yisrael goes ahead and actually gets an evaluation of the cow, and he says to the guy who's lending him the cow, Tosus learns it's a lending situation, because if it were actually a rental, the following case would be prohibited, la halacha, because it boils down to rebit, as you'll see. So if he borrows the cow and he gets an estimated value, and he says, I accept full responsibility, Rashi Bedafka learns it's talking about the rental, which relates to our previous discussion. And he says, listen, I'm turning this cow into tzon barzel. So then the halacha is, if it's a Yisrael who borrows from the Kohen, he can no longer feed a truma. So why not? Because now he's the owner. And vice versa, if a Kohen makes an estimated value, an evaluation, to a Yisrael, he can feed a truma. So you see that what defines the ownership is complete responsibility and only complete responsibility. So that's true over here as well. The avodim, being as there is responsibility, they can eat truma because of that. But that doesn't mean that he owns them in the sense of not having to return them to his wife. If he divorces his wife, he still has to return them. Exactly the same way that the Kohen who borrowed the cow still has to return the cow, doesn't he? Even though he accepted full responsibility and he's still going to be able to feed a truma. So you see that feeding truma and full responsibility doesn't mean you don't have to give it back to your wife. And therefore, it's not related to the Mishnah. Now, Rabbah and Rav Yosef were sitting around talking after the shir of Rav Nachman, and they were saying, you know, the truth is that we have a brisa like Rav Yehuda, namely that the wife has the right to be the real owner of Tzon Barzel and can insist in getting her King Louis the 16th set back. And Tanya Kavase, the Rebbe Ami. We have another brisa that says that actually the husband is considered to be the complete owner. Tanya Kavase, the Rebbe Ami, that the husband can insist on keeping the Louis the 16th set is because it says, Avde Tzon Barzel Yotzim V'Shein V'Ayin Le'ish. Remember, there's a halakha that if the owner knocks out a tooth or blinds the eye of an eved, the eved goes free. Who is the one that will free the eved by knocking out his tooth? The husband or the wife? It says over here that Tzon Barzel are able to be yotze b'shein v'ayin only if the husband knocks out a tooth, not if the wife does. Avalola isha. So you see that this brisa holds that the owner is, it says Baalav, the owner is the husband, not the wife, which is exactly what Rav Ami said. But we have another brisa, exactly like Rav Yehuda. There it says, Amaknesa Trum Lebala, a woman who brings in evaluated things into a marriage. If the husband wants to sell it, he cannot. Ratza Balimkor Loyimkor, what's more, even if the husband himself brought in a shum of his own and he gave it to his wife, he says, I'm giving you this gift. It is valued at $100,000. I have the rights to it and we're turning it into titanium so that if I die or divorce you, I'll have to pay for it, the $100,000. So you'd say, okay, I mean, over there, for God's sake, it was his own thing. It was his own Louis the 16th set. Even that, the halakha is that he can't sell. Imrat Zaba Limkor, Lo Yimkor. And in fact, if either of them sell, Machrush Nehem, if either of them sell for some reason, it doesn't mean both together. Obviously, both together can do whatever they want. But Machrush Nehem, if either of them sell, that was an actual Maisa that came to Shimon Gamliel to Paskin, and he said, the husband, and of course, she, when she gets the rights, can take the property out of the hands of the buyer because it was an illegal sale. Omar Rav Am Rav Nachman, Aloka is like Rav Yehuda. You have to give back that Louis the 16th piece. So Rava said to Rav Nachman, well, what right do you have to paskin to Rav Yehuda if we have a braita that says to go like Rav Ami? Why would you choose one braita against the other? Said Rav Nachman, because even though there is a braita like Rav Ami, but I say that Rav Yehuda's additional logic is important, and that is, it is wrong to merely look at the rights of the cold ownership, because included in this relationally involved gift is also the Shevach Beit Aviyah, and therefore Rav Yehuda is correct in inserting Shevach Beit Aviyah. And there was once a story of a woman who brought her husband in this extremely beautiful material that was made into a robe for him as part of her ksuva. And then her husband died. And it was a Tzon Barzel, which was supposed to go back to her. And the orphans, who are the heirs, they took it and they put it over their father for him to be buried in, to use as the actual burial shrouds for the mace, right? So these were supposed to be the din of burial shrouds. What's the halacha of anything that is given to the mace for burial becomes usur b'ana? And now she wanted it back. Omar Rava, kanya misna. It's too late. You cannot use the takrichim of the mace and give it back to her. Omar le nani, breder of Yosef, breder Ravler of Kahana. Wait a minute. How did Rava say that the mace was koneh if Rava quoted Rav Nachman as saying that the halach is like Rav Yehuda? And according to Rav Yehuda, she should have a right to say, that was my father's beautiful coat. I want to take it back. You had no right to give it to the mate. So isn't this a contradiction in Rava's psak? Omar leis, Rav Kahana said to Nani, Milo Moda, Rav Yehuda, the Mechusar Guvaina, Lani, I hope you're listening to this Gemara because it's very important that you see that the Gemara takes Nani's into consideration. So what it was that Rav Kahana answered Nani in this case was that wouldn't Rav Yehuda admit that certainly the coat has not yet been collected? That's called Mechusar Guvaina. Yes, Gershi, dearest. Your hand is up. Is it? So, is he not agreed that it's mechusar guvaina? Mechusar guvaina means that when you have a claim in court, until that claim is actualized by the court giving you collection rights, that claim is seen as a lien to collect. But it is not the equivalent of actually having it in your reshus. Now remember, when you make something kodesh, it has to be in your reshus. What's the din? If you have a lien on something, and it's in the reshus of someone else, and that person makes it kedushas haguf. We're not talking about kedusha to the bedek habayit. We're talking about it's an animal. He gives it to a korban. Well, that's what has happened over here. That since it's b'chusar guvaina, it remains in the reshus of the husband. The moment they put it on the dead body and they've made it into his actual shrouds, at that point, it's the equivalent of making it hekdesh haguf. This is Rava l'shitato. We had this before, that Rava said that there are three things that will cancel a lien. Hekdesh of kedushas haguf, chometz, where something has become chometz, you'd used it to give to a goy as collection, and now it's time for the chometz to become aser, and being meshachar and eved, all of those will release a lien so that he no longer has the same rights of collection before. And that would mean that she has a right, but not here. So therefore, Rava is correct in saying she has a right to the Louis XVI, but not here, because of the fact that something took away the lien that provided her rights of collection. Amar Rav Yehuda. Now, of course, just 1 second over here, because, I mean, this is very nogea. Personally, I mean, heck, we are not talking theory here. I figured we might as well have a Q&A. Okay. Anyway, so how about if there were two things that she brought in, right? So she brought in two sets of china. Now, at the time of the marriage, the two sets were worth $100,000, right? Together. And now the market's gone up. They are now worth $2,000. But he only owes her $1,000. And she's coming along and she's insisting that she wants the sets and she is willing to pay the difference for the other set. But what about then? So, Yichnisu lo shnei kelim be'elav zuz, v'shafchu ve'amdu al shnei alafim. She could take one for her ketuvah, and the other one she can insist on paying for, and she can take that also because of Shevach Beit Aviyah. Well, why not? What's the Kiddush? Shevach Beit Aviyah is hers? Ha'amra Rav Yehuda Chodazimna. Didn't Rav Yehuda say that already? Well, the obvious difference is that now the Tema Hani Mili Hechad Matyad Mishka Biktuvata. Ava Meitan Domi Mishka Lo Kamash Malan. Obviously, you would have thought that where she has a right to the value, that then she can insist on getting the item. But over here, she doesn't have a right to the value. She's only willing to pay. And you might have thought that the lien that is granted her to be able to recoup the personal property that she's connected to would not include exercising a right to be able to buy it out from under his hand if he doesn't want to sell it. Kamash Malan, that even there. Huh. Lovely. Beautiful. And don't think that Trevor's not here. He's holding on tightly to his son-in-law, as Zoom shows you. He's just not showing himself. All right, everybody. We look forward to a wonderful day together, Bezrat Hashem, and to seeing you tomorrow. Bezrat Hashem, once again, we've got a hand from Rabbanea, but fortunately, it doesn't count because it's not electronic. We didn't notice. Nobody saw anything, right?
Half a minute. There was some, I forgot what it was in honor of in France. There was an international thing relating to the Jewish community, X amount of years. They invited people from Israel, and Rav Mordechai Eliyahu was given the chair of the Louvre. And they showed King Louis the 16th chair. He says, how much is it? How much is it worth? Can I buy it? And he asks questions like this about the Louvre, and his wife, who understands French, says the interpreter is not fully expressing what you're asking. He's like, doesn't like it to make it right. So they're at the dinner, and Chirac, I think it was Chirac, this was told to me by Rabbi France, who's now related to me from the, and it's Chirac is there with
France is in Barnea's neighborhood. Barnea's neighborhood.
The whole people, listen to the story, it is incredible. So he's talking about them, and his wife nudges him and says, the translator is not translating. She says, excuse me, there are nuances here. Perhaps, I think it was Rav Strouk will translate. So he tells them in front of everybody, you have a King Louis XIV chair. It's part of your heritage. You won't sell it. And you want us to leave Eretz Israel and give it away? Right? It was the most, right? It was like an unbelievable thing to say that come on. Chirac said, hold everything. And this is not planned. He leaves and comes back with some French honor of something. That such a great man is willing to say that he gave him this national honor. Right? But this is what he used. This is Hashem to you. You want us to give Eretz Israel away?
Beautiful. Very beautiful. Beautiful. Okay. Lovely. Thank you, Rabbanu. Okay. Kol tov, everyone. Thank you so much. See you, Bezrat Hashem, tomorrow. Ugh.